Welcome, everybody. This is The Disposable Web, the sequel to the Social Business Hangout podcast series, available on iTunes. My guest today is...
Owen Greaves.
Now, Owen, you and I have actually known each other online for about 5 years. We started off on Twitter, moved on to Facebook, but this is actually the first time you and I have actually probably heard our voices.
That's true. I think it's probably even longer in terms of online, but... Yeah, we've never really had the opportunity to sit down and chat kind of thing, which is what we're doing from afar.
When people ask themselves, who is Owen, can you maybe elaborate on who you are, what you do, and what you're known for?
I often say, I'm a hard guy to like and a hard guy to forget. But my primary work that I do is a couple of things. One, I call myself an entrepreneur because I have more than one business. But I'm a futurist, and I focus my studies on the future of business. More so, not so much telling the future, but observing the changes, especially with the younger generations, and paying attention to what corporations are doing, because there's interesting things happening in the world, mostly, but even locally. If you were to just pay attention to your own communities, you'd be shocked and surprised that what they're paying attention to and what they're also missing.
One of the things that I quite often, very similar to your point, that I present to my clients is that what I call the outsider's perspective, and that's the ability to walk into a situation and see it with fresh eyes. And I find that, to your point about being a futurist, most businesses or most people are so caught up with their day-to-day, business that they don't have the active listening to see what's going on or just having that secondary perspective. Is that kind of the value proposition that you're presenting as well, or something similar?
Yes and no. One of the stress points are the day-to-day things, and the stress points for most business owners is they're so worried about making payroll, paying the lights, paying their staff, that they don't actually lift their head to see what's actually going on. Now, you'd be hard-pressed to find an entrepreneur or a business owner that would say that or admit to it, but it's just their actions speak far louder than their words. So there is this, all the stress points there of being a business owner, that there's things that you're responsible for, and you tend to focus on meeting those obligations as opposed to being proactive and looking at what's coming down the road.
When you meet with people like that, quite often I'll elaborate a bit on from my perspective as well, it's the stuff they don't know that they should know, and it's quite often difficult to point out how important the things that are outside of their field of awareness. How do you kind of deal with that? Because I'm sure you run into it as well.
Well, you run into it a lot. A lot of times you come across, I wish I had a good example for you right now, but I'll think of one in a minute. You talk to a business owner and they are just, it's almost like they're oblivious to how business has changed or is changing and how to kind of make a paradigm shift. And paradigm shifts are hard to make at the best of times. But I mean, we do them every 10 years as we live. The older we get, we have to make the shift because we've come to this realization that the older we get, the less we're able to do, and we get more tired, easier, faster. So we're not really paying attention. We're just kind of hanging on. And I think most of the business owners, when you do finally sit down and talk to them, they're just going, well, I'm just trying to make ends meet. And you could probably say that about everybody. Mm-hmm. But the reality is they're what they do in their household, they're also doing in their business. And that's usually not a good thing.
You're absolutely right. There's quite often that what happens at home carries over into the workplace and back and forth. And, something, I think it was Covey, he had the sharpening of the saw mentality, right? And it's something I've always appreciated because most people, as you say, are so focused on the day-to-day, getting the business running, making payroll, fighting the next fire, that they're realizing they're fighting the fire with a bucket with a hole in it. And they never see the hole because they're so focused on the fire aspect. One of the things you brought up just recently, the every 10-year paradigm shift, and it kind of ties into something that I did want to talk to you about is, because before we talk about the future, I'd like to maybe talk about the past, the present, and then the future. And maybe if you want to use that 10-year model as a guideline, where were we 10 years ago when the internet kind of was in that established world versus 10 years prior to that when it was kind of creeping in and caused that first paradigm shift? to maybe where we're going to be 10 years from now.
Let me give you some background on Owen. I've been on the internet since 1981, 82, back when the universities were basically the primary users, when you used Gopher and you had Lynx was your web browser, it was a text browser. But and bulletin boards were the bigger deal. And I actually own software for that. I own major BBS. And that was how you sent your email. Your email would take anywhere from 5 to 7 days. It would take a week to actually get to its destination through FidoNet. Mm-hmm. So, and you had to use a program, and one of the applications I used was called Blue Wave, and it was an email reader that you could read your email, reply, and it would make a packet, and then you would upload that packet to another bulletin board, and then they would just pass it on and pass it on and pass it on. So we've gone from the 80s, and remember the big monster cell phones, to what we have today. It's pretty clear if you take those 10-year, you know, packets, if you will, the advancements that have taken place over that. One of the things that hasn't happened, though, is people's mindset. We want to hang on to what we are happy with, what we're comfortable with. And so what ends up happening is we go into the state of denial almost. It's, you're not really willing to accept or adopt. Early adopters get all the fun, but they're also lonely people because you're out there on the crest of the wave and you're trying to share with people what you're seeing and what you're talking about, and they don't get it. Like, they don't understand. What are you talking about? And a lot of CEOs have that problem in corporations. They had the same problem, you know, back in 1980 or 1970 as they do today. If you were to take your CEO and put him here, and it was kind of like a funnel, and the CEO is at the front end of things, and back here is the rest of your team, and there's this narrow gap, and your CEO is going, oh, I want that, let's do this, let's do that, and it doesn't translate back to the people that can't see it well, because they're not really good at articulating the vision. So the same thing happens with all the devices we've had, television. Now, the internet, as you know, changed everything. And here we are today, and the internet's not, what, 20 years old, not quite. Here we are today, and we're still trying to figure out how to control the internet rather than adopting it. Mm-hmm. So there's a million ways of looking at this situation in 10-year intervals, but, you know, you could, again, you just have to look at what you had and what you have today and go back and forth, and realize that you didn't really move along as fast as you thought you did. You just kind of excited that there was something new as opposed to understanding it.
One of the things you brought to the topic there that I really appreciated was, you know, because to your point, back in the university day and you know, having to do the dial-up and connect and actually understand the packets and how the infrastructure work, now all of that is wrapped into, you know, a button. And you don't necessarily know what's behind the appliance. Have we gone to a point where, because we don't understand what's behind the appliance, that a lot of people are either taking it for granted or just not really appreciating what they have in front of them?
Well, I'm going to throw my wife under the bus. I bought her a nice, like a netbook, and it was too small for her, so we hooked up a nice big monitor and a keyboard and a mouse so she could be happy, right? And she doesn't care how it works. She just cares that it works. Mm. And I think that is, in general, what the masses care about. They don't really care about where it came from, where it's going. Does it work? Is it going to solve a problem for me? And that's how it works. And that's where most people are at. They don't want to know, well, gee, how does Google Maps actually work? Well, it's not important.
Is there something to be said there, though, about when you're trying to present the value proposition of, you know, something new or something that has been established for a while, that really at the end of the day you're just focusing on the point that is trying to solve versus the elaborate infrastructure that is required to make it work properly?
Yes and no. I think the trying to solve singular problems is an old way of doing things. I think today, when you're a problem solver or an idea person, you're trying to solve more than one at the same time. You know, it's like kill many birds with one shot kind of thing. The old day, and men are really bad for it because we can't really multitask, like really multitask.
We're good. We do, but we don't.
Yeah, well, we we think a lot of things about ourselves that women would just laugh at us for. But anyways, so we're really good at seeing a problem and fixing a problem. But now we're looking at a problem and realizing there's these tentacles, there's multiple problems attached to that one problem. So now we're trying to find a solution, not for the main problem, but for as many of those other tentacles attached to it. And it's harder and yet easier. But we're not really good, most of us aren't really good global thinkers. Visionary people might see something that hasn't developed yet, but global thinkers can see the patterns and they can say, oh, we got a problem there, and it touches that thing over there and it touches that thing over there. How can we solve this in one solution? So I think our thinking has to change. It's still part of this paradigm shift. Like every 10 years, we don't change our thinking. We change some of our activities, but not necessarily the way we think.
You brought up patterns, and I'm pretty sure that every 10 years, there's a lot of patterns that repeat themselves. You know, and it's that next generation that hasn't seen that pattern in the first place, or they're introduced for the first time. They think that it's a brand new problem, but in reality, it's a recurring symptom or a recurring trend or something like that. Are there certain things that you saw, you know, over the course of, let's say, those 20, 30 years of the internet that seemed to constantly rear its head?
I don't know necessarily rear its head, but it seems like the same questions are always asked. And it's, how do I make money? How do I, you know, it's all the same things. You know, when social media became vogue, people were going, well, why do I need to be there? And you know, you had all these gurus, and they're still out there. You got to be on social media or your business is dead. Now, if you remember back in 93, 94, they said the same thing about websites. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that wasn't necessarily true. In some cases, it probably was, but it's a generalized statement. Social media, for me, the way I described social media, when I went to an event here in town, the Royal Bank held a session for business owners of their clients at the bank, and they brought in this young ladies, they were a marketing company out of Vancouver, out, and they go, you got to be on social media, and blah, 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 this is why. And this is before Facebook really got big. It was all about Twitter at the time. And, of course, Twitter is where I got my start. I was the only person on Twitter in Abbotsford. I was talking to myself for years. And then I suddenly realized that people were going, why? But why? And so they're talking to you about, you need to be there, but they weren't telling you why you need to be there. And the why that they did tell you wasn't good enough. And I just stood up and I said, social media is not something new. It's just digital. And I said, when you were kids, I was one, and I said, we used to get together with our buddies and stand under a streetlight and talk. I said, that was social media back then. We were having a conversation, except that conversation couldn't be heard by millions. Today, your conversation can be heard by anybody that pays attention. And I said, so here's the big difference. The internet's made the game changer. But I said, your conversations now are heard by many. I said, so now you have to pay attention to what you're saying. Now you have to pay attention to who you're talking to. I said, because you don't know who you're talking to. But when you're under the street lamp having a conversation with your buddies, you know your market. You know who your target market is there, your captive audience. But now you don't know what that is. And I said, you really need to learn how to find out who your audience is that is interested in what you're doing. And typically, even like your show, there's XYZ number of people that would be really interested in what you're doing. Not the whole world. You don't need the whole world. So going back to, things really haven't changed. They've just gone digital, you know. So that's, and the same reoccurring questions. Well, how do I make money at it? And I, you know, my business model, the open and free business model, I use free, and people kind of go, well, how do you make money on free? And I'm going, seriously, you really asking that question again?
Yeah.
I said, free is just lost leader mentality. You're doing this show. If you have an advertiser, good for you. If you don't, you're doing it for free, and you're creating something. Gary Vaynerchuk did free. Wine Library TV for years. And he turned it into a moneymaker. So free, if you're smart, works really well for you. Or if you're not smart, it doesn't work well at all.
You brought up BBS at the beginning there, and it kind of ties into what you were just saying. Back in the days of BBS, you could still have those digital conversations, but you needed to know where the network was, how to get onto it, And really, when you were talking on forums, the only people that could see that content were those that were on the forum. All of those things that, you know, we talk about now, what's the proper etiquette for creating a tweet or a blog post or whatnot, all of those existed back in the forums as well. You know, they were the FAQs. They were the basic way of operating in that world. But to your point, what social really did was it scaled that to a public presence. That, you know, we weren't talking the level of transparency back in the 90s that we were talking in 2000. We weren't, because it wasn't as transparent. You know, that bulletin board, the guy disconnected his phone from the network, that world disappeared. You know, you don't have that legacy of content, or you didn't have the legacy of content that you
That's
have
right.
now, where, to your point, when I record these things and when I distribute it, a lot of what we talk about will be as relevant 10 years from now, because, to your point, people will still be asking the same stupid questions that
Yes.
they're asking today, because they're not realizing that the tools have changed and the techniques may have been refined and the audience may have grown to a different world. And it might be Facebook today and Snapchat tomorrow, but really, at the end of the day, they're conversations. And are we just getting caught up in the marketing and the how to make money on it, something that we're not realizing that at the end of the day, it's just conversations?
Let's go back before the internet came along. Mm-hmm. Everything in the industrial age was designed to get the money out of your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Jump ahead to the internet. Everything is designed to get the money out of your wallet. Nothing's changed. The method's changed. But the mentality hasn't changed. We're still trying to figure out how to get everybody's buck.
Mm.
And we also want, more than anything else, we just want and we want and we want, because we see somebody who's got something and we wish we could have, and that's the trap.
Mm.
Trap is coveting other people's stuff. And the reality is you really need to figure out how to be happy with what you got. And people have this other thought, and I had the conversation today, you know, that happiness is not something you can go and buy off the shelf at Save-On. Happiness is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You choose to be happy. If you're unhappy, it's obvious. If you're not a happy person, the rest of the world tends to know. But if you're a happy person, everybody's happy to talk to you. I don't know why that is. Call me crazy. But I think it's just human psychology, human behavior. There's also these gravities of human behavior. Things that have never changed. Well, gravity's never changed. It's never gone away, right? And the human behavior side of things, we like our comfort zone. We always gravitate to what makes us feel good. We like people that like us, as opposed to people that don't like us. Like, there's just things that we do that are just natural human behavior that hasn't changed before the internet and after the internet. The internet has made it easier to spread your message. Now, it was harder back in the BBS days, because you would respond to an email, but you had no idea if that BBS owner was actually going to deliver that packet on a timely basis, within a week, 2 weeks, a month. We didn't know if that message was going to reach its destination. And today, still 40% of email doesn't reach its destination. Why is that? But so the problem's still the same. They're all the same problems that haven't been solved. So, yeah, Fabian, you're right.
One of the things that you kind of brought up there that kind of caught my interest there is, you know, you've got the conversations and you got the tools to allow you to reach out to literally anybody in the world. Like, you and I are both in Canada right now, but, you know,
yeah.
I've interviewed people literally halfway around the world, and I'm like, cost me nothing. You know, like, and, you know, I grew up on military bases, so
well, it feels like nothing.
What's that?
It feels like nothing.
It feels like nothing. At the end of the day, you're right, that there are real costs, you know. But we have all of these techniques and tools made available to us, and yet it seems to me that, and I hate to say it because I'm going to piss off a lot of people when I say this, marketers come in and ruin it.
Oh, yeah.
You
right
know, like, when do you know that a platform has jumped the shark? When it's inundated by marketers. Because to your point, what's consistent across the way is, how do I monetize off of this audience? How do I get the eyeballs? How do I put ads in front of the eyeballs? When sometimes they completely miss the point of, you know, take YouTube as an example. You now have the ability to create a video and put it up there and share it and create, be renaissance, call it whatever you want. But yet, it always comes back to, how do I make money off it? there was an entire generation back in the Renaissance years that just cared about creating because they had their content. They were content with their lifestyle. They were content with their community. So all they really focused on was creating, not caring how to monetize on that creativity. Is there something to be said about our culture that we always come back to, I need to be able to find a way to monetize and get an ROI off of something, when in reality, you should be content with just the ability to have a conversation with someone across the world?
When I was younger, I remember being in high school thinking, when I get out of school, I'm going to go do this and this and this, and I'm going to travel, and I'm going to have that nice car, and you know, and the hot girl, and I didn't have any of that when I got out of high school. Man, I suddenly realized that everything I was taught in school worked against me. So that's all I'm going to say about that for now. But you go back to what you were just saying, the whole creating thing, and this is what Seth Godin talks about, the artist, right? And of course, we think he's saying something else, but what he's talking about, what's in us, and getting that out, and doing that passionate thing, whether it makes money or not doesn't matter, because that's why he says it might not work. But we were raised, from the time you're born, you were told no, so you, as a young person, you resist, and then the school system was basically telling you how to sit down and shut up, do as you're told. And then when you're done with that, we want you to we're going to plug you in out there, but you've got to find that place, and you're just going to shut up and do as you're told. And which is fine. If it works for some people, and some people, that's the best they can do, and I'm happy for them. But the reality of it is that we all have the same desire to be free, to have money, to have a nice house, to have a nice car. Like, that is still consistent from before the industrial age started. We were all trying to figure it out. Back in the day, you know, when Jesus walked the earth, man, everybody was just working the earth. They were planting, and then if they had too much, they would give it to the neighbor that didn't have enough. And today, we're not willing to do that. There's some people, there's a small percentile, but we're not willing to take what we have and give it away. And I think we're missing out on something there. So the whole theology and message of creating, to me, is the secret to success. Just create. Do. Create. Do. Create. Give it away. Show it. Hey, I made this for you, blah, blah, blah. And again, that sounds very Seth Godin-ish, but it is. He has tapped into a very natural power, I guess, for lack of a better description. James Altucher tells you to, you know, he's been on Wall Street for a living, and he just unplugged. And now he's a writer and does a financial newsletter and stuff like that, and makes tons of money online because he's taken his knowledge and his experiences, and now he's helping other people. But they're choosing to come in. It's that opt-in thing, right? Mm-hmm. But I just find that we are so busy trying to acquire more with doing as little work as possible. We're trying to shortcut. We're trying to game. That's why there's gurus. That's why there's experts. That's why there are these people that go, man, you can do this, right? And I'm going, yes, but not everybody can do it. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has the background and the education and the work ethic or the desire, for that matter. Some people just want it handed to them. The entitlement mentality comes into play there. So to me, a lot hasn't changed. The world has changed, but we haven't. And you know, we're moving into an exponential time with technology, with robotics and, you know, self-driving cars. And soon, you know, we're not going to have to pick up the phone to talk. It's just, we're going to be hardwired. Cars are being hardwired right now. Like Buick released a car that's got an internet connection. Mm-hmm. I was having a conversation with somebody else about the car, and they disagreed with my thoughts on privacy and stuff like that. But you know, I was talking on Facebook, and I said, "Happy birthday" is the most sung song in the world, but the most sung phrase in the world, how do I make money?
Yeah.
Like, we are still saying the same things that we said 200 years ago, 300, 400, I don't care how far back you want to go. And today we're still trying to figure out how to make money, but we're not willing to actually get our hands dirty.
At the end of the day, an equation is just an equation. You're the variable to that equation. And if you're the wrong variable, don't be surprised if you don't get the same result. And I think, to me, the main variable quite often is the attitude that you go going into it. Like, to your point earlier, I don't do this for money. I do this for knowledge. I get knowledge from you. You get knowledge from me. Our friendship is a bit more solidified. We have a nice conversation. I'm not watching the boob tube. Yay me. This is a success. You know, but to your point, most people will go, I need to blog for money. I need to YouTube for money. I need to Twitch for money. You know, and I've been talking to a lot of people about Twitch TV lately, and it's like, you're enjoying gaming and you're enjoying talking to people while you're gaming. That should be enough.
Yes.
You know, but yet you've got all of these gurus now that are coming out of the woodwork for Twitch TV on how to monetize on Twitch. These were the same people that were how to monetize your blog, how to monetize your YouTube, how to monetize your snail mail, right? You remember the letter writing campaigns and you will buy 200 envelopes and you will write this on 200 letters and you will buy 200 stamps and you will send it off to your email list. And, you know, we haven't changed in that sense because I think, to your point, humanity, even though in the last 30 years we've seen massive changes in technology, I don't think we've grown as a civilization during those 30 years because we're still saying the same things regardless of the technology.
And we're still asking the same questions. How do I? How do I? How do I? It's almost like we're not paying attention.
Or maybe we're just so focused on one aspect that we're ignoring everything else. And it goes back to what we were saying earlier about when you're talking to the CEO or the business owner, they're so wrapped up on one thing that when you're starting to talk to them about the stuff that might actually pivot their company to success, they're just focused on that one thing because that's what they've been educated to say or ask or do.
Or they're just really, really passionate about it.
Could be.
You know, like if you were to talk to Richard Branson, you would probably find him to be really different and unique. But I think CEOs, they want what they want. That's been my experience. And the other thing that I have learned in my 57 years, I'll be 58 this year, I have talked to many business owners and many CEOs. And when you go in and talk to them and you're the guy with the knowledge, you have the information, but the one stumbling block that most business owners and CEOs have is they don't want to be the one that looks stupid or I don't know. Mm-hmm. So they put up all the smoke screens. And
the bravado.
Yeah, and they just spew crap at you and you're sitting there going, oh, here we go. It's like, here we go again. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, humility takes you far farther than your arrogance and your need to be huff and puff and to look good and smell good. If you just literally admitted, you know what, I don't know how to get here. Can you help me find a way? Or do you know how to get from point A to point B in this particular situation? And if I don't know, I say, no, I don't know, but I know somebody who does. You can get more out of that than sitting there going, acting like you're the guy. Like, mm-hmm. I know everything. You couldn't. And the other thing business owners and CEOs do is that you, the consultant, couldn't possibly know as much about my business as I do. So how are you going to help me? And you know what? Business is easy. Mm-hmm. Transactions is simple. You know, business to business, customer to customer, that stuff's easy. But how you package it and how your message goes out, that's not so easy.
At the end of the day, everything's just a packet. But how you route that packet, how you have a user experience around that packet, how you, you know, whatever. Those are the things, well, I hate to say that's more the marketing side of the packet. But at the end of the day, you know, and I've had similar situations. We do things differently at our company. And then you sit down with them and they look at it, it's like, no, you're identical to every single one of your competitors. The only thing that, you know, you're stuck up on is that you're not willing to truly find and define where you truly are different. You just say you're different, but you really don't know why you're saying it, because you just know that you have to say it because that's how you present yourself as being independent.
Well, there's also the fear you're gonna take my money from me.
Well, yeah.
I mean, right?
And to your point, if you're fearful of someone taking money away from you, you're going in there with a completely defensive or untrusting, you know, thing. And I think that's one of the things that the internet really has done for us in the last few years is we are, those of us And I don't want to say it's all of us, because a lot of us are still stuck in the old models of how do I monetize this or whatnot. But we've been given this world to this ability to live a far more transparent, open dialogue, you know, out there and grow as a result. Those that have opted into that are looking at the future in a completely different way, because A, we've been able to isolate patterns in the past. We're able to indicate areas that are constantly prone to be disrupted, you know, and whether or not you're looking at it as just Maslow's hierarchy of needs and what are the disruptive elements on all of those tiers, and those things will always be there. So how does the current technology, or what's the Internet of Things, like, you know, to your point, what's the ROI of the Internet of Things? How long before that question starts happening? It's not a question. It's happening. So it's more of how do I infuse that into my self-actualization, once again, to pull up Maslow's into it. But most people are so stuck in the I need to have food on my table, I need to have money in my wallet, I need to have a house, I need to have the love, that they'll never get to that self-actualization aspect. And when you look at the Internet of Things as an example, in the viewpoint of self-actualization, how does it make me better? And if you focus on that, I think, honestly, the rest of the pyramid fills itself. It's almost an inverted relationship to what Maslow originally said. And I don't know, I might be crazy in saying that.
We're trying to have a lifestyle at a much lower payroll. Mm. And we're trying, and we're acting like we have it when we don't. It's that old fake it till you make it thing. But, you know, you brought up the Internet of Things, which is opening up a can of worms like you wouldn't believe. As I was mentioning, Buick released a car that is connected to the internet. And I made the statement on the Facebook. I just said, you know, auto dealers are leveraging the Internet of Things, and what they want to do is they're going to want to control that internet connection. They're going to want to have that private channel belong to them so that they can pump the ads and do the subscription to access to content only through their internet connection to that car, or the channel of cars that they will have. And of course, the conversation then becomes, oh, no, it's all about privacy. And I'm going, privacy and that are two different things. Privacy is a whole different issue. This basic privacy is already gone. Like, we don't have it. Now, we do have some issues where privacy is necessary. Medical histories, you know, the medical field, for example, is one big one. So I'm not going to try and touch on all of them. But privacy is important there. But for the most part, if you want to find out where I live, you just got to Google my name. Like, you'll find me. That went away years ago, and we thought we were being smart by putting our address online so I could easily just send it to somebody. You know, and the phone, you know, you couldn't unplug if you wanted to. Like, all the RFID chips, then your driver's license, your passports, your phones, car, you can't hide. So privacy, in just general terms, is gone. You could not hide. You couldn't go in the bush if you had all that stuff. You'd have to literally strip down, put a pair of pants on, a shirt, now, before they all become part of the Internet of Things. We're advertising on your clothes and all that stuff. Because that's coming, right? That's it's here, but it's not publicly available yet. So it's just this whole messed up, mishmash chaos, and we're really bad at doing chaos. We're really good at controlling and slowing things down and putting it in place so that we're comfortable. I have the same conversations with nonprofit organizations, and I said, you're all really, really good at getting your ducks in a row, but you're really, really bad at just doing without doing the ducks in a row. I said, if you were to just go and do. I belong to a church and I belong to a Bible study group. And I said, our Bible study group, we decided we wanted to go and feed the kids on the street. Mm. We didn't go and ask the church for permission, and we didn't start a committee. We didn't say, well, how should we do it? Where should we do it? And who should do it? And what should we give them? We just got up, went out, and made lasagna and fed the kids. And we're not willing to do that. That feels unsafe. It doesn't feel comfortable. And I think that's where most people are, and especially older generations, they're very, very comfortable. younger generations don't give a rip. In fact, they don't even value ownership of anything. They just want access. They don't want to own a car. They don't want to own a house. My two boys, they're right there. I just described them. And they're against the establishment. What the heck? We were against the establishment back in the 60s and 70s, and we're still doing it today.
Right now you're seeing Facebook doing their internet.org, and it's getting a lot of backlash where people are saying they're trying to create a silo within the internet. So the old internet, which was the wide internet, and similar to the internet of things where, you know, I own the pipe to that car. How much of the internet of the future will be curtailed to a certain degree because people want to still contain and control that eyeball path?
It's all about the net neutrality, right? Mm. So the big pipe holders want to control what you can do and what you see and all that stuff. And what's happening is it's now fragmenting. They're not getting their way. So now the layer to tier behind them, the next layer of big business, they said, well, we'll do that. So they're helping the big pipe ISPs and telcos and the cable companies by saying, well, if you can't do it, we'll do it. Because they actually have a different layer of freedom that the major pipe holders don't have. So it's changing, it's fragmenting. But eventually there will be a rebellion. People will either plug in or plug out. Yeah. And it will end up not necessarily like the Mad Max days, but probably like Blade Runner days, you know, like this, all the androids and all that stuff and trying to hide and do things. Or maybe we'll end up being like Terminator, where the machines will actually take over and we'll be underground and we'll be trying to figure out how to survive, all because we had this thing called the internet. And there are people out there that are genuinely afraid of that. There's a real fear of that. I'm more concerned about the economic capacity of what the internet is doing to the world. Mm. Jeremy Rifkin wrote a really, really, really cool book. I read it just recently. It's called The Zero Marginal Cost Society. Highly recommend that. It's everything now, the margins are just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So it's almost free. Hence my open and free business model. Mm. It really plugs right into his theology, is that we're just getting, the margins are getting so small, it's hard to make money quickly. So you have to do what Chris Anderson talked about, the long tail. Yep. And you have to just drag it out and make money over longer periods of time and try to figure out how to do it more than once. Because now you can't just have one single revenue stream. You have to have multiple revenue streams. And it's getting tougher and tougher. So from an economic value, I think we really need to change the way we think about finding a job. Mm. We need to really find a way to say, okay, that job is really just a means to an end. Now, there's still going to be a need for a forklift driver. There's still going to be a need for, you know, taxi drivers, even if we're flying cars. There's still somebody who's got to shuttle you about. Or even the driverless car. You still have to figure those things out. But I don't have the answers for them. I just know they're coming. So I look at the economics of a country, and if we just talk about Canada, we're pretty small. I mean, we're 35 million people. And, you know, we got a almost 7% unemployment rate, which is low in the grand scheme of things, but that's getting bigger. Mm-hmm. And the other part of our problem from an economic standpoint is our country is getting so much older, so much faster, that the actual labor market can't fill all the jobs with its own native people. So immigration's taking place. So I'm touching on a lot of things here.
Mm-hmm, I'm
but
following.
They all come to the same place, and that is, how do we survive, and how do we make the economics of all of our households work if we can't have a job? Mm-hmm. So we have to figure out how to get off the couch, stop watching Lost, as Gary Vaynerchuk would say. He uses a little different term.
Probably an F-bomb or two.
Yeah, and just invest in yourself. James Altucher wrote the book, Choose Yourself. You've got Seth Godin talking about picking yourself. Pick you, don't mm-hmm. let that pick you. So there's a theme there, and there's a message that I strongly believe in. But there's also a reality that not everybody has the capacity or the ability. And that's too bad. But we all do have something.
You brought up Seth Godin, and the one aspect that I've always liked about him is, you know, one of his big examples is if there's two pieces of art that look identical, one was done in China, one was done by someone you like, you're willing to pay more for the one because there's an association to the individual versus the product. So are we shifting into a world where, you know, and we've kind of referred to it as, you know, the experience economy or however you want to put it, where the value of the product, as you say, is such a small margin that you can't make money on it. So you need to wrap that product in whether or not it's the experience or the stigma or the just, you know, like Apple, you know, you're not buying a phone, you're buying an Apple product.
You're buying into a culture.
Yes.
You know, a mindset, a hip thing. It's cool to belong to something. And that's another human behavior. Mm. We all want to belong to something. So Apple figured it out. They made their culture, and it's hip to be a part of that culture. And their products are good. They're just really friggin' expensive.
Well, because to your point, you're paying for the fear of missing out. You're paying for the culture. You're paying for the niche. You're paying for the, you know, I'm the first guy that's got the Apple Watch. You know the first gen, you know, iPod was garbage for the first gen Apple. But it's not about the product. It's about the ego in many cases. So when you look at the market, it's great if you've got an economy where all of those things are in play, but if all of the jobs, as you say, are robot factories and forklifts that are self-driving, and really at the end of the day, everything's barcodes and RFIDs, and you've got Amazon drones dropping your shipment instead of a driver, and you know, you've got all this talk going on now of the crowdsourced economy and all that, where, you know, it's a lot of, I'll do this outside, like Uber as an example, right? I don't need to be a taxi. I can just, I got a car, I've got some free time, boom, Airbnb, another example. You're seeing all of these innovative models really disrupting commerce, or is it they're finding a way to fill the gap that has been removed because of all that other stuff that came into play, such as, let's take Airbnb. You've got all of these prime locations that were picked for hotels, you know, all of the main brands, and this is where you got to be, and you're seeing a pendulum shift to, you know what, no, I don't want to give the money to the man. I'd rather give it to the guy that's paying for his family's food. Like, are we shifting back into that because of all of these things happening as well?
Well, I've said it a million times anytime I speak somewhere. It's just, if you help enough people get what they want, you're going to be okay. But we're going back to the days of working the land where you help your neighbor, and you know, if they're in hardship, you are going to do what you can to help them. You don't have to. You want to. Mm. And you're going to show that you care. And caring ends up building trust. I don't care how else you put it. Mm-hmm. So as long as you have enough of those trust relationships built, you're probably going to be okay. But I think we're going back to the time of saying, hey, how can I help you and expect nothing in return? Mm-hmm. Because typically what ends up happening, you'll do it and you help. There is a return. It might not be cash at the moment, but it might be big cash down the road, or it might be somebody sent something to you, and you know, you may give me a contact because you could help this guy. You're a connector now. So you're just building up your ecosystem of helping people, and it just becomes very much, I don't want to use the term viral because I don't like that term, but it's like a virus. It just spreads, and it becomes infectious from the standpoint of, oh, geez, how can I want to help this person back?
What's the ROI of caring, as it were?
Well, I don't know. Like, but, you know, like Gary Vaynerchuk, I bring his name up again. What's the ROI of your mother? Yeah. You know, like, that was a great slam to all the people out there trying to be smart. But everybody's trying to figure out the return on investment, and just sometimes there isn't one. Because ROI, those three letters mean money, mean cash. And ROI doesn't do that. It doesn't care if it's money. It cares if it's time. It cares if it's solving a problem. It cares if you fix something. So ROI is not about money. It just sounds like it is.
One of the things that you brought up, you know, that really caught my interest is the fact that we are so tied to an economy that is truly, we're seeing bits and pieces of it right now, but it's so exponential that, it's gonna hit us around the same time as the silver tsunami. You're gonna have the baby boomers basically disappearing as the Internet of Things goes into full steam. You follow what I'm getting at?
Oh, I totally get what you're saying.
So let's talk a bit about that future because you're well placed to understand both impacts of that, given especially the fact that we're already starting to see the fringes of a shattered economy, lack of better statement.
A long time ago, in a land far, far away, I wrote an article about how, especially social media, but how the internet is the tidal wave, and how business owners are looking the other way, but this tidal wave's coming, and they're not sure. And the problem is they don't know how to surf, so they only know how to run. They don't know how to surf, so they run because they just heard there's a wave coming. They didn't actually turn around and look, so they could figure out how to navigate it. They just heard there's a tidal wave coming, so they start running. And this is the, how do I make payroll? How do I, I need to get more customers. I need to get more customers. There isn't a business owner in the world that doesn't need more customers. So there they are. They're focusing. They're inward now, okay? And then the tidal wave comes, and then they get hit, and that business is gone. They didn't learn how to surf. They didn't learn how to figure out how to leverage this tidal wave that was coming to their advantage. And so this tidal wave of change and this paradigm shift, it just keeps going back to paradigm shift for me. We are so unwilling to give up the past. We're so unwilling to unlearn what we know and learn something new. We just don't want to change. We say we want to change, business that I want change, political fields, right? BC wants change. Ontario wants change. We want a change in government. We want a new government. We want a new change. And they all do the same crap. You're not really changing anything. You're just changing the way you say it. So we just generally don't know how to change, I think. Now, I'm generalizing. There are people that are very good at it. There's good change agents, and they're willing to just lose it all and start over. And that's kind of the mentality you have to have. So if you're going to start a business, and we're always so afraid to fail, again, don't want to change, we don't want to fail. Like, there are some real human behavior issues that we got to get rid of. We got to figure out how to overcome them. And it just it and then that's all part of the tidal wave. It's not just commerce, it's just everything is changing, and it's huge now, and we don't know how to navigate the wave. We don't know how to navigate that tidal wave.
Both you and I live, I would say, a very different life now than we'd lived, 15 years ago, in that, you're already talking about scaling down and all of that. We're not defined by our possessions as much as we would have been 20 years ago, let's say. I quite often joke that I gave up my 50% of my 50% of my 50%, and I'm left with 5%. And I'm happy with that 5%. How much of that change agent mentality comes from living a life where you're not burdened by all of that unnecessary clutter so that you're able to, I hate to use the word, you're more nimble as a result, or maybe you're not as worried about losing something because you know that it's nothing. It's just a possession. How much of that is, I'll be perfectly blunt about it, is that later part of your life, that post, midlife crisis realization of what life really is and what you can do with that when you take that and apply it to that tidal wave, that's a really powerful combination of knowledge in my mind. It's knowledge of what's coming and a rationale that there's only so much thing that you really need to care about.
It's called contentment. I think that's what the word is. I think contentment. And I think some business owners are very content with being small businesses and not adopting things that are coming because they're just content where they're at. They don't have this deep need to go and do the big thing. Everybody wants to be a rock star, by the time they're 22, if they haven't made it, you know, oh, life's over. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not 22 anymore. And I remember being 22 and I was an idiot. So I'm not saying everyone's an idiot. I'm just saying, in general, we're not as smart as we think we are. My father once said, we're a long time stupid and a short time smart. And I think that happens when you're later in life. You see, for me, I can see the end. I never used to be able to see the end. But I'm almost 60 years old now, and there's only so much time left. I got another push here. And I want to help people, because that's my real true gifting, is the gift of helps. I want to help people get past that anxiety of, specifically in the business market, I care deeply about the business community, is to help them get over the angst. But to help them become content, not necessarily staying small, but actually being content that they've actually done something right and built something awesome, but they could be better. Mm-hmm. And because at the end of the day, all of us start a business so that we can have the back end of our life back, because we're selling it early.
Yeah.
And we want to have this back end thinking that we're going to be able to retire. And the reality is financially, you can't, because retirement is not a requirement of a job. It's not a requirement of age. It's a requirement of money. So you can't retire unless you have enough money to do that. And retirement is a really bad word. It doesn't truly explain or tell you what that is. And I honestly believe that no matter whether you work for someone else in a job sector or you're self-employed, you always have to be doing something with your hands and helping other people. And without other people, you will never have success. That's just a given. It's just like gravity to me. You can't be a success all by yourself in your room with a camera and talk to nobody. Mm. You just can't.
It just
doesn't work. I think the word just comes back to contentment and being content and choosing to be happy. And you can change your world with those two things.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I think a lot of businesses confuse the word content and become stagnant instead.
And or they're standing still.
Yeah, and those are the ones that the wave will hit, because to your point, the content person, A, knows the wave's coming, knows what's important to them, and will navigate the storm, for the lack of a better term.
They'll try to wait out, right? Like an earthquake or anything. But you know, the mom and pop businesses are the ones, they're going to be the dead bodies. I mean, because they are typically not the real business savvy people. They figured out that they could work for themselves and they just want to just do this thing over here, right? And which is awesome. It's great. And I'm happy for them that they figured out they could do that without having to go work for somebody else. I don't particularly like what jobs do to people. I don't like what money does to people, because we give those two things way more power than they deserve. The power really is yours, and you're the one that should be choosing. But we've been taught, trained, educated, told no our entire lives. No, this is what you do. It's like if you don't write down the long equation to the math teacher, you just give him the answer, he'll fail you because you didn't show him that you could figure it out. And I'm going, that's got to go away, that mentality. And we really do have to just pick ourselves, and choose our families. But recognize you have to work your behind off and do things that make you really uncomfortable in order to do that, to provide that. And it's hard. I don't downplay that at all. And there are people that just can't get over that hump.
When you look at, how do I want to say this? Advices that you would give to people that are struggling with that hump. You know, I know we've touched a bit of it, on it just randomly in the conversation, but I'd like to just tie that together. You know, we'll call it work-life lessons, if you will. Call it, looking at the past to better understand the future. You know, there's various ways that we can approach it. But for those that, how do I want to say this, are just simply unaware.
Or unwilling
to do what it takes in light of the changes that are not just coming, but are literally here.
Well, the math doesn't work. You can't do nothing. You have to do something. Because the the risk of doing nothing is far greater than doing something. You know, like if you do nothing, you're going to lose everything. Mm-hmm. And my biggest piece of advice is no man can match what a woman can do with love and revenge. No, that doesn't work for business, does it?
It works well for corporate takeovers.
Yeah, and or, you know, man-woman relationships. I think if there was any one thing that I could say to a business owner is to learn humility and let people help you. You know, like let people come in and help you. There's a huge fear there of being taken, and there's far too many people that are willing to take. And so the risk is there. But also recognize, no matter what you lose, and I say this to all my clients and people that I help, I fix their computers, and I'm going, there isn't anything that you're going to do to this computer outside of taking a sledgehammer to it and dropping it from a 10-story building that you can break that I can't fix or can't reinstall or colon replace. Like, everything is so disposable and so interchangeable now, like jobs with mm-hmm. people. And we're willing to trade our time for dollars. It's really unfortunate. But some of us have no choice. We have to, because we don't have the capacity to be on our own and make that work. I get that. It's not everybody. But you can walk down Main Street and see that. But I think the humility is a big factor, and being willing to ask for help. If you can ask for help, your world's going to open right up. I don't care if you're a business owner or not. Being humble enough to say, I don't know. Do you know somebody that does? That's probably your biggest secret weapon. I don't think there's a better weapon in the world than humility and the being willingness to ask for help.
This is what I love as well about the internet that we have right now, is there are so many platforms and tools available to simply get the answers that you're looking for, but you need to ask the question to start. And I quite often compare that to search versus discovery. Discovery is when you come across someone in a feed or whatnot, and you go, oh, I didn't know that. To be able to search, you need to know the questions to start with. And quite often that question needs to come from you in the first place.
In the process of discovery, someone actually pulls that question out of you because you're having a dialogue. You know, someone said to me, says, oh, how do you come up with these ideas? And where do they come from? And like, you write about them on your blog. And it's, well, how do you come up with your blog topic ideas? And I said, have you ever used Quora? I said, there is so much conversation going on there and questions being asked. You could write blog posts forever based on the questions that are being asked there. Yeah. But I said, when I write about stuff, it's because I'm paying attention to something. If you would just lift your head up and take a look around at what's going on, but really pay attention. I had a young fella come to me and said, I want to start a business, but I don't know what to start. And I said, you got a car? He said, yeah. I said, okay, here's what you do. Get in your car and drive down Main Street. And I said, but drive slow. But don't slow the traffic up, just drive slow. And take a look at what's on Main Street. And then after you've driven Main Street, come back and do it again. I said, and then stop, grab a coffee, and then ask one question. What's missing? Mm-hmm. I said, now that's looking at a bricks and mortar business, right? Which I don't highly recommend. But I said, that idea of what's missing doesn't have to be bricks and mortar. It can be digital. It can be turned into a physical do job, but using digital to leverage that. And most of us we don't want to do that simple task of driving down the road and asking that hard question. We want somebody to give us the answer. But I said, you want to be self-employed? Go do something. Figure out what you like and don't like by going and doing. So this kid goes out there, he figures, I'm going to build Facebook pages for people. He hated it. And then someone asked him to do some yard work for him. And guess what? He found it. He became a landscaper. And now he's actually doing very well in this town. So sometimes just go and do something is more important than trying to do all the research in the world, getting your ducks in a row.
Well, and I think that ties back to what you were saying earlier. Sometimes you just got to go out and do, as opposed to getting all your ducks in a row.
Yeah, it's just do something. 8 years ago, I was really frustrated with the web hosting companies, the big ones, the HostGators, the what have you, because they didn't have it mastered yet, but they were making it really hard for people to do what they wanted to do. So I decided I was going to start my own web hosting business. So I did. And I kept it small on purpose. It was for friends and my clients that I consult with. And whenever I go to an event in town here, whether it's public speaking or not, I sell my web hosting. I just tell them this, I own this, and if you're looking for a simple, cheap, really dependable, affordable solution, because everybody's got to put a website somewheres. Now, you can use the free canned services. Don't recommend them, but they're there for the bottom feeding people that don't know squat about how to build a website. So they're bottom feeders to me. So I went, that was 8 years ago, and I just kept selling it through my workshops, through my public speaking and whatnot, and built up a clientele base. And I know almost all of them personally, whether it's like this on Skype or whether it's in town in my area. But my clients that I actually consult for, I don't have anybody local. They're all over the world. So I figured out how to leverage this thing called the internet. Now, no, I'm not a millionaire. I don't need to be, nor do I wish to be one, because money changes people. Money does not make you the person you want to become on the inside. The person you want to become, it doesn't come from money. So, yeah, all this other stuff just started to happen when about 8 years ago, and I got booted out of the corporate sector, and I just went home. So I've stayed home ever since. Not bragging, that's just what I did.
We live in a world where you have the ability to reach out to a market anywhere in the world. And whether or not it's from your office, your laundry room, or whatever, it at the end of the day comes down to finding someone's need, willing to be that broker, for lack of better statement, of fixing that problem or addressing the concern or whatever it might be. And really, at the end of the day, it's the mentality that you go into the relationship, because I honestly believe that your clientele picks up on that, whether or not you call it energy, whether or not you call it karma, whether or not you call it goodwill. And that reassurance opens up far more doors than dealing with people that are, why are you doing this for me?
I almost never talk about money when I'm talking with a potential client. I'm usually always talking about them and trying to figure out how to fill the need that they think they have. Sometimes the need they think they have isn't actually real. It's a different need. It's something underlying. You usually have to dig a little bit. But I almost never go into a conversation with anybody and saying, oh, well, this is my rate. If you don't like it, see ya. And there's way too many of those people out there. But typically, one of the first questions I have, in fact, I met with a local farm here. They wanted to do, I did some research for solar panels and whatnot, doing the whole green footprint thing. And he invited me to his office to talk to him. And my first question's out of my mouth, and I said, hey, well, we're here. What is the outcome that you expect to have from this meeting today? Typically, if they can't answer that question, they haven't thought about why they brought you in. So you really, if you're cautious and if you're wise, you will typically try to figure out that motive before you actually get into conversation. And especially if they don't know that, you're never going to get to the money equation. So you just have to figure out what is it that's missing and then get them to admit that this is what's missing. But you know how consultants are. We just mirror back what you tell us anyway.
I use the term, active listening quite a lot, and it's a skill
Yes.
that I've developed mostly actually through the podcasting and stuff like that, because I do quite a bit of listening while I'm interviewing and whatnot. And it's scary how many people come in with a pitch as opposed to coming in with a question.
Questions are everything, though, but you got to have the right questions, good questions, not just a question for the sake of asking a question. It's just that simple. Like if you've done, I never go to a business or a client without doing some kind of research of their business, trying to get a feel for what it is they do. You take a chicken poultry farm and they've automated everything except for the cutting part. Okay? They pride themselves on the fact that they hand cut the chicken before they package it. But that's one part of their business that really slows them down. Mm-hmm. And it also stops them from getting that one extra turn in a product in the course of a year. And you know, turns are everything in businesses. They are trying to flip as many as they can. But if that one thing is bargaining you down, but it's the thing that you live on from a marketing perspective, you can't automate that. So now you got to look for something else. Well, it's probably transportation on the back end. You can probably automate that and save yourself some time and gain maybe, an extra half turn. But not likely. But a lot of business, they're not willing to ask the right questions or look at the business objectively. They're typically responding or acting in a not desperate, but in a need of urgency, but they're not sure what to do about it. I don't know why today, in this day and age, and I'm shifting gears on you here, why greenhouses aren't all solar panels on the roof. I don't get that. Like in south of Spain, there's 650,000 kilometers of greenhouses, and they're not solar panels. Do greenhouses not work if they're solar panels? Or, I don't know. It's just puzzling. So we're not thinking out of the boxes, and I hate that term too, but we're not willing to step out and fail. We're not willing to step out and say, I want to do something really different that makes sense. I'm actually looking at putting solar panels on the roof of my house here, and I happen to be in a good location, facing south, got lots of sunlight, but there's a cost of about $3,000 for an on-grid system. So basically, you're collecting it. It goes to, here it's BC Hydro, and they store it. And then if you are making more than you're using, they're paying you back, kind of thing. But if you live in an area where you can't do that, you have to be off-grid, which means you've got to have battery banks. That's where the cost is. So it's really difficult. Then there's the geothermal, the ground, the heat from the ground. And then there's wind. So those are the three areas. And Alberta's really done a good job of putting up all the wind turbines in southern Alberta because it's just windy all the time. So they're generating. Germany, for example, has 190 million buildings in Germany, and they are all being retrofitted for geo, solar, and wind. And they're going to provide power for neighboring countries. They won't have a hydro problem. But we're not willing to do that over here. We're just stuck. So I just covered a whole lot of ground there
for you. And it's funny because I was having a very similar conversation with a good friend of mine about all of that stuff as well. But I think to your point, we're stuck because we don't, how do I want to say this? Well, you said it best. We don't want to fail. We're so, to your point, right from the beginning of fear. Our education system, the fear of getting an F.
It just boils down to that, doesn't it? It does. Just fear. And we don't want to look bad. We got this thing about looking bad. When I was in high school, I didn't care. Mm. I was the class clown. I was the idiot. If I looked stupid, it didn't matter. Even today, I'm on stage every week. I sing. And sometimes I'll say the wrong words. Or I won't even say the words, I'll just go, I'll make a sound in key that's close to what the words were to be. And people don't notice. And I'm thinking, oh, they all hate me. I screwed up. I can't believe I did that. They're all just going to laugh at me now. And nobody notices, except for musicians. They know. But you're typically in front of a lot of people that aren't musicians most of the time. So this whole failure thing. It's sad. We're afraid to risk. We're afraid to take chances. They don't have to be life-threatening.
No.
Why would you do that? Why would you put yourself in harm's way? I don't get that. And there are people that do, but I don't get it.
We both live in Canada, where we got a fairly good safety net, for the lack of a better statement. It would take a lot of massive failures for you to truly be SOL.
I failed so much, I can't stand it. It's like a bad taste in my mouth sometimes, but I learn more from the failing than all successes. My successes, I tend to ignore what I did.
And I think you're absolutely right, because I think the impact of a failure has such a more resounding analysis that comes out of it. We almost take our successes for granted now.
It's like being a comedian, I tell a joke and it's just a big thud. And you go, well, that didn't work with this crowd. Mm. It might have a different crowd. So you might have chosen the wrong target market. Doesn't mean the idea was bad. You just did a big resounding thud in that target market. Let's focus on a different target. People have a challenge of, oh, how do I change from one target to another? Because they think it's the same. Everybody thinks everybody's their customer. Well, you know, and I both know that's not true. The people that read my blog, and there's not many, okay, it's not a huge following here. A lot of people just, if they're interested in what I'm talking about, I had one guy who says, hey, I really enjoy your writing. And I'm going, really? Because I don't get a lot of, you know, engagement interaction on my blog, because I'm basically just spewing my observations or something that's I've done that's happened to me. But typically I try to talk about observations, and I try to get people to say, well, what do you think? Think I'm nuts? My blog doesn't get a lot of that activity, but on Facebook, I get killed sometimes. And the most recent one was when I was talking about auto dealers leveraging the Internet of Things. And the first person to respond was, Owen, I respectfully disagree. But they were confusing my statements and my observations with privacy. They were coming in with privacy when I was saying, hang on a second, this internet connection to my car is owned by that car dealer. It's not owned by the internet provider. They're going to control what I can do with that internet connection. They're going to pipe stuff down to me like Facebook does with their advertisements, which is wrong most of the time. And they're going to tell you what you can and can't access. It's like the packages that you put in your car today. You can get the technology package, which will allow you to connect your phone via Bluetooth to your car, so your hands-free phone. But you can also do email. I don't know, that's a bad idea. So I have that Bluetooth connectivity. I don't have the email part, but I have the ability to be hands-free talk and to get text messages while I'm driving. I can't respond to text messages, but I can pick up the phone while I'm driving without actually hanging onto the phone. So that control is still all about control. You know, I think Gerd Leonhardt is the futurist that I thought I was the only one talking about it back in 2008, 2007. I was talking about, you know, the paywalls and the gatekeepers and the 70-year-old douchebags, and soon I will be one. that, you know, all this, you know, we're going to have to change the way we think. We're going to have to figure out how to adopt this and figure out how to adopt that. And Gerd is still saying the same things today that he was saying 10 years ago. I'm still saying the same things today that I was saying back in 2006 and 2007 and 2008. Back when, you know, like I got onto Twitter in 2008. I was a bit of a late comer on that one. But I remember that you like have 100 new followers a day just because you were there. You know, of course, today, you know, if you're lucky to get 30 or so, or
they're
20.
All bots following you now for the most part.
Yeah, I'm not even going to go there. Yeah. Come on. That's just, and it's all part of the gaming, trying to find a shortcut, find a way to beat it so that I can get to the place I want to be at. And you get there, and it's still not what you wanted it to be. And that's the same thing with money. You pile up this money because you think when you get that money, you're going to be at this place that's just going to be utopia. And you find out you got more problems with the money than you did without it. And that's what people don't seem to understand about money. It changes who you are, but it also changes those around you. And there are very few people in the world that are wealthy and are really grounded and humble, and, you know, they're really helping people. There's not many of them. They all say they are, but there's not many that are really genuine about it. So it's just one of those things, man. Again, money and jobs don't bring out the best in you. What brings out the best in you is the things that are just aching on the inside of you. They just have to come out. The art, as Seth talks about, the art, that's the thing that's aching inside of you. And we're all afraid to fail, and that's where he talks about the lizard brain, right? So we're, oh, you can't do that. It's like that little devil on the shoulder, and the good guy and the bad guy, and the bad guy, you know, it's like, oh, you can do it. Oh, yeah, you can do it. You can do it. No, I can't do that. You're going to fail. You're going to look stupid. You're going to be blah, 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 blah. So we don't try. Perfectionists struggle with that every day. Perfectionists will not try stuff unless they know they can do it right. Almost perfect. And if they're going to win, it's going to be a great outcome. Well, they don't learn as much as the person that goes plop, 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 fail, fail, fail. And they don't. They figure out the way to do it better next time. And again, Seth's message, just keep doing it. Eventually, someday, it's going to come. But we stop. Have you ever read a book called Acres of Diamonds?
No.
And basically, we feel like we have to go to another country or to another province or to another, you know, part of the area to find the geode. Okay, and a geode, you crack it open, it's beautiful. And the reality is they're probably in your backyard. You don't have to go as far, but we tend to quit before we find that geode. I'm done, I can't do this anymore. But if you had to take on just one more step, one more fail, you know, you probably would get to where you want to be. And we're not willing to wait. We're, you know, that entitlement and that I got to have it now. Hence why we have credit card problems, you know, debt problems. We're not willing to wait. Back in the 60s, if you needed to buy something, it wasn't could I make the payment, it was do I have the money. And today it's all about can I make the payment. Well, you get payment to death is like being pecked to death by a chicken, right? You're just, and then you're exhausted at the end of each day trying to make these payments and juggle the money.
The juggling of the money tends to become what becomes the focus point at that point in time.
It consumes you. It's your only focus point. So, you know, I guess you might say I'm a bit of a philosopher. I tend to touch on a lot of areas, but I have so much in my head that I want to get out and share with people. So I decided to write a book. So, and it's on my open and free business model, but I'm focusing not just on the model itself as much as I'm going things that are changing. For example, TELUS, which is the national telco for Canada, has decided now that, because when you have your internet connection with them, they gave me, like I have the Internet 50, it's called, so it's a 50 meg connection, and you get 400 gigabytes of bandwidth. Throughput. But they're now going to be charging for the overage. Mm-hmm. So I think it's $5 for the first 50 gigs and then it's $10 per after that. So, you know, they can make a lot of money out of that. But they also give you the ability to buy an unlimited bandwidth package for $30 a month if you don't have their optic TV. If you have their optic TV, you can get that package for $15. So you can see where we're being nickel and dimed here, right? So, but I don't have cable TV. I have internet TV. I bought a Roku 3 box. In my last blog post, I talked about how you could give yourself a raise. Knock off $100 a month on your cable bill. Cut the cable. Go get a Roku box. It's $99, $100 or whatever. Buy yourself an internal antenna for your TV. You'll get off-air channels. And there are HD channels. And here we get about a dozen of them. And then get in the Roku box, you've got 450 channels. Tons of stuff you'll never watch. There's more TV there than you can ever watch. But Netflix, of course, you're always going to have Netflix. But then there's also the Google Play network where you can attach your credit card or your PayPal account. And you can pay for watching stuff that way. Then there's also Cineplex. They have a channel in the Roku box. And you have to have an account with them and attach a credit card to it. So you can still go and see what's the latest, but you can also use Netflix for stuff that you've already seen. There's some stuff, obviously, you haven't. So I saved myself $100 a month. So I gave myself a $1,200 a year raise. I bought the box, so it was $99. The internal antenna that I bought was $89. So there's my expense to have internet TV. And then I bought Major League Baseball. So I'm a bit of a baseball freak. I love baseball. So it's $129.99 for the season. So that's 6 months. And that's it. That's my cost for my television instead of cable TV. So then I thought, well, geez, I'm using more bandwidth than I have. So I'm going to get nickel and dimed. So I'm just going to go and pay the $30. So that's $325 a year on top of my $300-$400 that I spent. I'm still saving $800 per year just buying what I want to see. Most people aren't willing to cut the cable because there's status. Like, well, I've got optic TV, I've got this, I've got that, I got satellite. I'm going, okay, you're broke. You're just broke at a different level. Wherever you're at, you're broke. If that's your goal, and that's the lifestyle you want to live, fill your boots. I can't control that. But I don't have to fall into the trap. The internet has allowed me to do that. The internet is the game changer. Not all the social media platforms, not all the tools that you use. The internet by itself changed everything. And now, like you, you're taking advantage of that by having conversations with people like me to share ideas, to share your thoughts, to educate and to learn, but most importantly, have fun. I love having fun. I'm all about the fun, damn it. If there's no fun, I don't typically go there. A lot of people ask me, how come we never see you very much? And I said, I'm never invited. If you don't invite me, I don't go. Well, most people don't care about that, but I care about that. It's an integrity thing for me. I don't just invite myself. I don't just show up because, oh, I should be there so people will look at me. Like, if you don't invite me, I don't typically go there. And I won't go if it's no fun. If there's no fun there, I'll turn you down politely. It's just the way I am. It's just who I am. I'm a bit of a goofball.
It comes down to what your motivation is for doing what you do.
Yeah. You're going to reveal me, are you?
It's what I do.
I love
people. It's called active listening.
I love people. I love helping people. And I would rather you won before me. And I don't know how to put it any other way. It's just that it sounds all airy-fairy, how nice. But my heart is about other people. It's not about me. People think I'm all about me because I talk a lot. I've got 15 years of radio in my background. I talk. It's what I do. But more importantly, I just want to help you. And if I can help you, great. If I can't, sorry.